This Lieutenant Colonel retired, Peter Chambers, recently retired May of the 30th of this year. I have Colonel Alan West with me, a good friend and fellow compatriot from the state of Texas. Welcome aboard, sir.
Well, Doc Chambers, it's great to be with you, and it was great seeing you just this past weekend down in San Marcos, Texas, for the former Texas Ranger Foundation Gala. So I pray that you're doing well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was good seeing you. It was a nice surprise, and thank you for inviting us. Yeah. You know, we've got we're at a precipice right now, sir, and I think we'll just kick this off with the bottom line up front, as we call it, and you and I operate the mm-hmm. same way. Is we have a situation where the United States of America that we knew, that the army that we came into way back in the day, we're old war horses, is not the same as it is now. Mm-hmm. And we could say that every generation says it was always harder for me. It was harder back in World War II. It was harder then. And there were key critical moments throughout our history of the military where if something didn't happen, it would have changed the course of everything. And that was D-Day. That was, the Japanese attacks on Hiroshima that ended it. But before that, the bloody Tarawa, Iwo Jima, Okinawa, those key critical moments changed everything. And what I see now is with the invasions upon the United States in many different ways, in a fifth generation warfare, if you will, the mandates are not helping things. And what we're talking about here is the mandates with the shots, the required jabs that I personally, as a task force surgeon, that was my job on the border with Texas, was my last job for the last, since 2003, special operations surgeon, going downrange, helping my special forces guys and regular army guys in combat conditions. But now we're fighting something that's unseen. And the mandates are not helping us. And I'd like to get your opinion on what you see as somebody that's been out a little longer than me, because I just came out of uniform.
Well, thanks so much for allowing me to share my thoughts, perspectives, and insights on this. And, you know, having served 22 years in the military, then also having served in the United States Congress, I can look at it from both perspectives, because we in the military took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And that's the litmus test for everything that comes out of the federal government, and especially when it involves our United States military. You know, it was just recently, within the week, Heritage Foundation just put out their annual index on military capability and capacity. And they came out with the fact that the United States military right now is not capable of doing its, you know, two MRCs, major regional conflict mission, not even capable of doing one of those major regional conflict missions. And when you think about the fact that we are looking at putting anywhere from 30,000 to 50,000 of our men and women in uniform out of the military because of an unconstitutional, an unethical, an illegal, and an unauthorized order that came down from the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States of America, that is one of the key things that's undermining our readiness and capability and capacity in the military. So many people are, you know, really understanding that you've got a degradation in our recruitment and retention goals, because so many saying, why do I want to be a part of this military when they're so focused on cultural Marxism and dividing and conquering us? And, you know, one group is an oppressor, the other group is a victim, and then these mandates. And so when you think about the whole thing about this quote unquote vaccine mandate, first and foremost, a vaccine is there to eradicate a disease. We're talking about a virus. So this shot is not going to eradicate this virus. It's going to continue to come up. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Deborah Birx came out about 3 months ago and said that we knew going into this that this shot was not going to prevent people from getting the COVID virus. And if you really look at all the statistics out there, the people who suffered the most from the COVID were those who had comorbidities. They had heart issues, they had diabetes issues, they had obesity issues, they had high blood pressure issues. So if you're a good, strong, healthy individual, chances are you may get sick, but you're going to overcome it. I mean, you know, that's just part of being in the military. But when Joe Biden decided in the middle of the debacle in Afghanistan that all of a sudden he wants to shift the narrative, the Biden administration wants to shift the narrative mm-hmm. from this incredible strategic operation and tactical failure, and he comes out with something that he does not have the constitutional authority to be able to do, it's not part of his duties and roles and responsibilities as the executive chief executive nor the commander in chief to order healthy people to take something that's under the emergency use authorization, EUA. And that's what we ended up having here. And so now think about this, Doc. You got a commander in chief. You got a secretary of defense who both of them had the shot. They've had all of the boosters. And guess what ended up happening? They still got it. And as a matter of fact, Joe Biden got it twice. So how is it that you're going to tell people in the military that they need to get this shot mandated to them? And oh, by the way, it was just a couple of weeks ago that the commander in chief of our armed forces, Joe Biden, was on 60 Minutes, and he said the pandemic is over. So if the pandemic is over, then we need to end this whole charade about people having to be injected by emergency use authorization of something that is proven to be ineffective in the first place, and which is really causing, as you well know, more harm and danger to our men and women in uniform, the myocarditis and things that you can address and you can talk to yourself.
These were the things that we presented to Senator Johnson back in January of the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database, numbers that went through the roof, and there was no answer from the DOD. It was, matter of fact, a thumbing of the nose when a political article came out and said, well, it was a glitch. Well, either way, it requires an audit. And this, this is just a minor thing, really. To me, when I'm looking at soldiers in the face in the ICU, and I had around 6,000 soldiers on the border at the time in Texas, and I'm reaching out to everybody in my chain of command. And this is where the problem lies, because you and I both know you go up the chain of command. But when you get to the point where people don't answer your questions, you go to the next one, right? You don't just jump the chain. Mm-hmm. Well, I had to go all the way to the adjutant general, and nothing happened. So then I went to a congressman. It took me two congressmen, finally a senator, to get to it. And I don't know if it's fear. I don't know if it's embarrassment that they might have invested in something. I don't care. I care about soldiers, and I care about my mission. I mean, that's just the way it is. The mission, the men, and me. And we've got to get the mission done, but we've got to make sure that those soldiers are all taken care of. And what I saw was not taking care of soldiers. And what I still see is not taking care of them. When you're booting out critical thinkers, the people willing, like me and others, I had an 06 friend of mine, a bird colonel, he got out because he just couldn't take anymore. But I had to get a tongue lashing from a 2-star who told me, and I'm going to paraphrase it, Doc, it ain't about the science, it's about the policy. And I said, well, there's an Army regulation that says that I have to do informed consents. Well, you're not doing it anymore, Doc. Now, sir, that's an unlawful order. Now, that's a moment, that's a critical moment in an officer in 05, Lieutenant Colonel's moment in his life where he puts his career on the line. But look, we've put our lives on the line for our troops. You don't think we won't put our careers on the line? That's the kind of people that we're looking for in D.C., whether they wear a uniform or not. We need that same kind of passion.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I would tell you that if you want to accomplish the mission, you put your men, your troops first, because if they know that you're a leader that's willing to go to bat for them, they're going to make sure that the mission is not just going to get accomplished. It's going to be above and they're going to exceed the standard for you. But they have to see that type of leadership that's willing to go to bat for them. And that's what is missing right now. And so I think about a commander in chief and Joe Biden, who just recently, after Hurricane Ian, called down to an aviation survival technician, second class, Zach Lesh, with the United States Coast Guard, and to congratulate him for all the rescues that he had been doing. That was the second time that President Biden had called this exact same member of the Coast Guard, a rescue swimmer. And the previous time was because of an incredible heroic act that he had done. And I interviewed his wife on my podcast. But guess what? He's facing in the next 30 to 60 days to be discharged from the United States Coast Guard, just the same as we've seen cadets discharged from the Coast Guard Academy, just the same as we've seen cadets from the West Military Academy, Air Force Academy, treated as second-class citizens over the thing about not wanting to take this experimental emergency use authorization drug, and that we know is not going to prevent anything. And so it's so important that those members of Congress, and you know, I used to be one and I was a veteran also, H.R. 3860, which is sponsored by Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky, is sitting around and has a discharge position right petition right now, discharge petition. And that is so critical and important because that will enable this issue, this piece of legislation, to get onto the floor for debate. And that's why we need more men and women who have served in the uniform. They have the courage and they have the competence and they have the commitment and the conviction to stand up and remember the oath that they took, which never had does not have any statute of limitations. You know, I served at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, with the current Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. Looked up to the man. He was a brigade commander, 3rd Brigade of the 82nd Airborne Division, 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment. He was Panther 6. I don't know who he is now because he has completely forgotten that it's not about politics. He did not take an oath to a political party, did not take an oath to Joe Biden, did not take an oath to anything other than the Constitution of the United States of America. Right. And right now, everyone out there, as we're going to this election season, you need to be calling up these members and these representatives and ask them a very simple question. Are you going to stand and support our men and women who have been illegally told and unethically told that they have to have this, you know, drug injected into their bodies? Are you going to support H.R. 3860 or not? And I think that if you have people that say, well, I really undecided, I haven't looked into that, don't vote for them. Just that simple. Right. Just say, you know, this is such a critical issue for me and our national security that if you don't want to protect our men and women in uniform, you don't deserve my vote.
Right. That's perfectly said, sir. It's when I walked down the halls in the Longworth building and popped into rooms when I was back in the day when I was in uniform and I had to go brief someone on the Hill, boy, they'd welcome me right in the room, you know. And since I became a whistleblower, it's like, hey, there comes Doc. I don't want to talk about this stuff.
You're a leper.
And you know what? I don't really care what they think about me. I don't care what general officers. I went from golden child of special operations medicine to persona non grata in about 3 weeks when I was a whistleblower because I told the truth. That's all I did. And I had to think about it, you know. Senator John, are you sure you're going to give your name? Absolutely. If we're going to get this information out, but there's higher stakes than that. And the stakes are at the strategic level of this nation. Ultimately, that's the third order effect here. And I want people to understand that as we weaken that front line, the people that, you know, that stand that post until they're properly relieved, until we strengthen them by good leadership to know that they're being supported. And I'm going to tell you what, on the border right now, about a third of those soldiers will be kicked out here soon because they're not going to take the shots, period.
And that's unconscionable. And that's unconscionable to me because you have a complete breakdown of constitutional duty and responsibility to protect the sovereignty of the United States of America. And when you think about how many illegal immigrant gotaways, the people that, you know, we've seen on cameras, but we haven't been able to track them, we're talking about close to 1 million. Now, Doc, here is the relative perspective. 1 million gotaways, 1 million illegal immigrants in the United States of America. We don't know who they are, where they are. That is greater than the combined active duty strength of our United States Army, United States Marine Corps. The number of people that we've lost to fentanyl in the United States of America, over 100,000 in just the last 18 months, 2 years. Right. That's greater than the combined losses of the Korean and Vietnam War. Now, if you continue to decimate your national security apparatus, decimate your United States, you know, armed forces, when you are going up against what, without a doubt, is a dedicated, a concerted plan to undermine and to attack the United States of America, and we have a force greater inside America than our own force, and our capability and capacity is being reduced, and we're kicking people out. And in some cases, they're trying to give them dishonorable discharges or less than honorable discharges, which means what? Then they won't be able to go out and purchase a firearm. You know, that's one of the things that affects them. So, again, you start to ask yourself, is there a bigger, you know, plan with this whole vaccine mandate of our United States military? Is this a purging of our military? Are we trying to purposely degrade our military? Because I can't think of any reason why we still have a mandate when you have a president that has said the pandemic is over. when we know that this this shot has nothing to do with preventing people from getting COVID virus.
There you go. And that's exactly what. But when I was with Matt Staver in Liberty Counsel's case, Seals versus Lloyd Austin, once again, we had to prove that it was not safe. And I said, this is the numbers I have. This is how many people are being damaged. Whether you call it that or not, this is not typical for a 27-year-old fighting age male to come in with heart conditions. It just doesn't happen. If you did that downrange, if I had that many people coming into my aid station downrange, we would have to do an inquiry into what was happening.
Yes.
We would have to. It makes us combat ineffective. All right, so that's number one. Is it safe? Well, I don't think so. That's my opinion. Is it effective? No, it's not.
No.
The numbers were that ages, fighting age males, females in our ranks have a 99.997% chance of doing just fine. That's what we did on the border. We use a nasal swab, and we're looking at 12,500 people walking across a week from the Mike side, from the Mexico side. Without any mask, without any, I had people coming across with TB. This so-called COVID thing was the least of my worries, right? Okay, so when you look at all that, you say it's not safe, not effective. Can you do it by lesser intrusive means and still be combat effective? Affirmative. Yes, I can. How, Doc? How did you do that? Well, I got a nasal swab and some Betadine on my medic kit, and I had them swab their noses out. I've been downrange 12 times to foreign places or austere places, and had dealt with a lot of diseases. We use what good medicine teaches us. I don't need an algorithm or somebody to mandate to me to give somebody something that's not really required. And so that's where we need to have this HR 3860 come in, because this is besides the purging of the forces going out, but the damage is being done. And then the recruiting effort.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that you just brought up is that I never like it when people say there's only one way to solve this thing. And that's what they tried to do. You know, instead of us looking at the ivermectin, instead of us looking at hydroxychloroquine, instead of us looking at monoclonal antibody therapy, instead of us looking at protocols such as, routine taking of zinc and vitamin D3, all of those things are options that are out there. So again, it comes back to what's the real purpose behind this? And you see a lot of pharmaceutical companies like Moderna and Pfizer and others that are making money hand over foot, because we've just mandated, we've just forced people to take something that now, like I said, we find it is not effective whatsoever. And oh, by the way, it has had adverse effects on a lot of people that are healthy. And so why is it that we still have this quote unquote mandate in place against the healthiest of individuals in our society, which are men and women in the United States military? It doesn't make any sense. And again, it's been proven that it is not effective. It's been proven that it does not stop you from getting the virus. Maybe it lessens the symptoms, and you don't, not as in so much suffering or whatever. But still, there are other protocols that you can take to do that, preventative protocols. And so why aren't we talking about this? But the bottom line is, once again, HR 3860, sponsored by Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky. Every single member of the United States House of Representatives and the Senate should be supporting that. And after this election, they go into what is called a lame duck session. And so why can't it get done in this lame duck session? Without a doubt, it should be one of the top priorities for a new Congress, the 118th Congress. And so, again, if you're out there, and we will be going into early voting here in Texas next week. There are about, I think, 9 states have already started voting. Go out and call. Flood the offices of these candidates that want your vote, the senators or the congressmen that want to return, and say, are you going to support HR 3860? Get them on record. Put it out there on social media. But we got to bombard them as the American people and get them to understand it is our duty and responsibility to support and defend and protect those that are supporting and defending and protecting us.
That's right. I couldn't have said it better. And I do appreciate you taking the time. I know you had a tight schedule today, so we're gonna wrap this up. But I'm gonna end with one little thing, and it's something I use on some of these shows here, and to represent the time that we're at. On June 6, 1944, on Omaha Beach, the 1st Infantry Division, which you know well about, the Big Red One, was going on Omaha Beach. And George Taylor, a colonel, which says he's got some pretty, some intestinal fortitude, was on the beach with his troops. He's looking around. He knows that there's just people laying out. We're getting waylaid from all fire, mm-hmm. direct fire, indirect. Guys are hunkered down on the beach. He looks around. He sees a Bangalore torpedo go through some wire. It opens up the wire. And he says, gentlemen, there's two kinds of men on this beach, the dead and those who will die. Follow me. Let's go. And he busts through that wire with the boys, and they got through the beachhead. And that's how we got all the way to Berlin with that kind of intestinal fortitude. And I've seen that out of you, sir, in previous discussions and things on the Hill.
Thanks.
And in your service. And I've had to be with some great heroes, some of which who did not come home, but had that. And that's what brings everyone back. It's that one that you need, that leader, to bring them back. And that's the moment we're at right now, people. Don't pee on the beach. We got to move. I need people to get up and move. That's an order.
We don't win on defense. You got to be on offense. And it's time for us to take the high ground, which is exactly what they did. Like you said, they got off the beach and they got up on those cliffs and they started to march toward Berlin. And this may be one single step in this moment, but it's a huge step for us restoring our military capability and capacity and the trust and confidence of those young men and women who are serving us right now.